Welcome everyone to our event this evening, Identity and Neurodivergence Within the Community. This is part of our Cultivating Caring Communities. We'll hand it over to Ardell at this point.
Thanks, Roger. And I just want to introduce Carrie King. She is in Colorado, and she has been for quite some time planning a intentional community that largely centers around accommodations for neurodivergent communitarians. So take it away.
So thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for the introduction, Ardell. It's good to see you again. My name is Carrie King, and I do live in Colorado, and I've been living in community for 13 years, and I've also been navigating my own neurodivergence for, well, I remember it being a problem in high school. And a problem, according to who? Once I discovered, what's his name, the guy who teaches about multiple intelligences, Howard Gardner, I realized, oh, it's not a problem. It's just that all of the intelligences that we human races gifted with are not honored in mainstream society. So that's the problem. So how do we shift that? So that's near and dear to my heart. I tutored for 14 years, helping students similar to me who were getting by, but didn't seem like they needed anything, and yet were falling through the cracks and really dealing with a lot of imposter syndrome and things like that. So this is near and dear to my heart, the way I live my life. I'm accommodating my experiences with ADD, my experiences with dyslexia, and with reading differences. I don't like to claim them that I have them, so I call them experiences, and that's just part of my healing journey of that I am a nuanced person and I ebb and flow. The intentional community that I've been working on diligently for the past year is in Colorado, and we will, the center of our bullseye is Golden for several different reasons. Many of us do still work on location, not from home. And so we needed to be close enough to Denver and or Boulder for people who need to drive to work. But a lot of us want rural enough that a deer can come through the backyard and hang out in the backyard eating apples from the tree, which I had that experience in Lakewood. And so just a little further west, we'll have that more. We are all inclusive, all genders, all ages, all neurotypes. The only rule really is respect for self, others, and the property. It has been interesting that I'm attracting so many different people from so many walks of life and wanting to please everyone. So we're also looking at the difference between preferences and then must-haves. And so we're doing a lot of groundwork on things like that, like, okay, if you could wave a magic wand and you could have all of this, that would be great. And when you're going to live with other people and ebb and flow with other people and collaborate and fit your puzzle pieces together, then what are your top must-haves that are absolutely non-negotiable? And what can you be flexible on in order to get along well with others in community? There's so much more I could say. I don't know if there's anything in particular, Ardell, that you and I have talked about over the last few months that I should share, but I feel just honored to be here and excited to meet more people and hear your stories too. And I'm an open book. If anybody, I'm happy to put my number in the chat or my email if anybody wants information or wants to pass it along for someone who might want to live in Colorado, west of Denver.
All right, thanks. I believe Megan will be joining us shortly. I will. Hey, Megan, right on cue. I had just begun to introduce you, and I will put in the links, I'm sorry, in the chat, a link to your Intensity Hub.
Awesome, but, thank you.
But go ahead. And awesome. Can I ask you to take 15 minutes to a half hour?
Okay, sure. And I can just kind of lead a little bit of a discussion too, to make it interactive. So I'm Megan, and I founded Intensity Hub to really bring together neurodivergent entrepreneurs and create community for neurodivergent families. And my story starts as a speech language pathologist in the schools for 13 years. And I was a really fierce advocate in special education and designing inclusive learning environments for students and training staff. And I bounced around a lot, starting autism programs or doing assistive technology district-wide or specializing in social emotional learning for the school or gifted and talented coaching and programming. Lots of different areas. And then what I realized towards the end of my career was that I wasn't including myself in my advocacy and really was just advocating for everybody else and discovered my own neurodivergence. And so that was about 5 years ago. And it was also sort of prompted around the time when my kids got identified and I realized that there were a lot of similarities to the traits. And so that's when I discovered my neurodivergence. I have five different areas of neurodivergence: gifted, ADHD, autism, auditory processing disorder, and traumatic brain injury. And what I have realized is that as I shifted out of working in the public schools and started my own business to be able to really just meet my needs and have a sensory friendly work environment and not be so just overwhelmed by everything and put some supports in place for myself. And that's when I started just discovering the heavy load that I was carrying. Parenting neurodivergent kids and being a partner to a neurodivergent husband and just trying to juggle all of the things with adulting. And so I started looking for solutions to just get support. And that's when I found co-housing and intentional communities. And it's really been a game changer whenever we visit them. It's hard to kind of lead change with a full family to be able to shift into being ready to integrate into an intentional community. And so we started looking about 4 years ago by visiting for like just a work day or just a meal. And then staying in a common house for a weekend, and then a week, and then 2 weeks. And now we're going to go for a month, which will be the longest time. We've stayed in seven different intentional communities at this point to explore. And many of them are not neurodivergent affirming, we've found. And so that's really an area of focus as I build community and either look for the next one or create my own or partner with people. And so that's really what we've been kind of bringing community together first. And we don't necessarily have a property or land. And we're really just trying to bring together people and my focus is on supporting entrepreneurship as a way to help people build financial stability, and their kids can engage in it because it creates like a project-based learning opportunity for kids to, find something that they're interested in and then think about how would they want to sell it and what are the steps to take? And so build some of those skills of goal setting and initiation and working together as a team and communication, collaboration. And so those are some of the skills that kids can develop when they kind of pursue entrepreneurship. And that's really, a lot of the work that I've been doing is just bringing people together. And the house that I have in Arvada, Colorado is a 4-bedroom duplex. And I launched it as an intentional community house where each room is rented out individually a little over a year ago. And so that's been like a learning opportunity to be able to kind of build a small scale and beta test what it looks like to create community and support entrepreneurs to live and work the way they're wired and really understand how they're wired and create opportunities to grow their business. And so those are kind of some of the areas that I've been creating community. And so I'd love to just kind of invite people to share any reactions or insights or they're thinking of what they're kind of noticing in terms of after I've shared what's coming up for them. I'd love to just hear people's reactions.
Anyone wants to ask a question or wants to speak, they can raise their hand or just turn their mics on. Actually, I was doing a little background, trying to understand what you're doing a little better. And there was one part that I thought was kind of intriguing. It's about integrating empathy and conflict, that you have to somehow avoid. I think there's a tendency that, as you put it, that you're actively learning to integrate empathy with healthy conflict rather than avoiding tension to protect others' feelings. Can you give an example of what empathetic conflict looks like in a professional or coaching relationship?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the hardest skills that I'm continuing to learn. I think it's really being validating of other people's emotions and acknowledging that there is no bad or wrong emotion and it's okay to feel however you feel. And then just balancing that with your own needs and your own just desires and emotions too, and allowing that tension to kind of hold both, that person's needs are valid, that person's emotions are valid, and my own needs and emotions are valid too. And so how can we share that with each other and be able to find a middle road when conflict comes up and there's different perspectives or somebody makes a mistake or something doesn't go as planned. I think that's just a continuous skill to build because it's so many of us weren't taught that and are just, as children and are just practicing and learning as adults.
Do you have a process or facilitation to help that process when there's a conflict and one person needs to speak lovingly to another?
Yeah, I mean, I typically use like a combination of restorative practices and nonviolent communication. And so being able to, acknowledge harm and, come up with ways to repair. And really, for the restorative practices side of things, it's about building relationship first so that there's something to repair. Because I've been in situations where people, there was conflict and people wanted to repair, and I wasn't interested. I felt like I don't have the energy. I'm not motivated to invest the intense energy it takes to go through a repair process when somebody hasn't made those deposits into the emotional bank account of we've built relationship first and now it makes it worth it. And so I think with the restorative practices and building relationship first, I'm very selective about even who I'm willing to expend that energy that I even want to repair with versus I'm going to set a boundary and leave and not engage in conflict with this person because I just don't have capacity. And then for the nonviolent communication steps of just acknowledging the emotion and the need, you know, the observation of what you noticed, what you see and hear, and then the emotion and the need and the ask of those kind of four pieces. Those are the main things that I use for processes. And then I noticed in the chat, there's a question. What was your biggest surprise when you learned you'd exclude yourself from your self-advocacy? The biggest surprise for me was how powerful and helpful and impactful it can be to model self-advocacy, because I thought the best way to be helpful and help others and make a difference in the world was to advocate for others and support others and notice other people's needs. And that if I noticed my own needs and advocated for my own needs and set boundaries, that wasn't as helpful to the world. And now I've realized that modeling and acknowledging my own needs and showing what self-advocacy looks like to other people is actually more impactful in many ways than trying to help somebody else. And so whenever I help myself, I'm being a disruptor. I'm leaning into my values of inclusion and equity and social justice and being an activist, because when we each do that for ourselves, that can really change the world. And so whenever I notice myself wanting to help somebody else, I pause and I think, like, how can I acknowledge my own needs in this situation and say how this is showing up for me? And I've been especially doing it when I notice it with my kids now. I'm still practicing. I jump in and try to save them and other people sometimes, but to be like, okay, what am I noticing for myself here in terms of my own needs to say this isn't working for me, instead of sharing what I'm noticing for their needs. And that's just been a huge surprise to me.
Is there a way that you keep those ideas alive in your community where people are mindful of nonviolent communication and the things you're talking about?
You know, I'm still really early in the community building process, because even though I started it a little over a year ago in terms of the housing piece, and then some of the other community aspects that I'm doing of, like, you know, I launched a homeschool enrichment program gathering because I homeschool my daughter, and that was like this February. And just even within my own entrepreneurship, I only started adding team members in the last few months. And so it's one of those things that I still feel like I'm really creating the container and, like, just going through the messiness of it. And I mean, we created community agreements and conflict processes when we first launched the house, and but people weren't co-creating it because they were sort of coming into it, and it's one of those things that people need to be a part of to really buy into. And so it's like, okay, there's monthly meetings to kind of check in and address things. And it's, but like the heavier emphasis is on, like, relationship building and, you know, starting to just do more activities together and even just communicating clearly what it is to bring in the right people. Because when I first launched it, there was just like one person there for like 2 months and no one else came. And then he left because nobody else came. And, you know, it's just like there's so much trial and error and failure to figure it out as you go. And so I feel like we're in the very baby stages of like really like co-creating and building and learning the conflict piece of it, because that's like after you really build relationships and community and norms and agreements and all of that.
Well, I want to praise you for taking the adventure into this stage of life. We're all going to need to get there some way, and you're just a pioneer, and you're doing a great job. So thank you very much for coming tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, a relationship cultivation, I guess we could call it, is a challenge, and getting things started is really a challenge. I've been in that situation a lot myself, where, you know, even with this group, you know, I started out with one other person and we were meeting, and then people would come in and they'd leave, and you know, it was the thing is, it takes time. There was, in fact, one of the people that likes to come here every once in a while, more often than not, has suggested it takes has read a piece about it takes so many hours. I think it's like 40 hours before you can really develop any kind of relationship with someone. So when you come into a place and thinking that everything should fall together without any problems, that's really not very realistic, unfortunately. But we're all so anxious to get to be a part of something, right? That when it doesn't happen, then we start to think, oh no, what's wrong? What am I doing wrong? You know, that's one of the things I do a lot, is I blame myself if my meetings aren't working out. I just think I've done something wrong. And you have to have patience and forgiveness of others and yourself. So that's been my
I would
experience.
say I'm my own worst critic, I
Yeah,
think.
me too.
I've always been one of those people with really high expectations for myself. And if it doesn't happen instantly, I get down on myself. And it's just a ton of practicing
Yeah.
grace and forgiveness as I struggle through it. And it's like I have so much going on with just the family life and kids and work and all these things that it's juggling a lot.
Yeah. Some other things I read while, you know, I was looking into your background. There was something that you did on embracing systemic friction, and you mentioned workplace situations, which it's interesting because when I was working more regularly, I was the guy I was working for came up to me and said, "You know, I'm wishing my life away. You know, I don't want to be here, but this is where I spend most of my time." So workplaces have to become healthy, just for our own sanity and our own, you know, fulfillment, you know. So how do you coach neurodivergent entrepreneurs to protect their energy when they have to interface with traditional corporate systems that tend to prioritize bureaucracy over more deeper, more equitable problem solving, such as you suggest?
I really coach people to understand their needs and see their needs as valid and like start to notice that the problem is with the environment and with the systems. So that because for so long people blame themselves for not fitting in and see themselves as broken or the problem. And that's what I did. And I'm still continuing to unravel. And so to be able to say, like, this is too loud for me, this is too bright for me, this is too fast for me, and just advocate and the, you know, acknowledge needs and self-advocate. And I mean, ultimately, like, that's why I've made it my focus to coach people on self-employment. and entrepreneurship, because that's where you can actually create the environment that works for you and work the hours and follow your energy cycles. And some people work best at night or work great for 1 week and then need a whole week off, and they might have an amazing productivity that somebody else would do over the course of a month in a day or two, but then they'll like be down on themselves for not like getting enough done or working every day a 9 to 5 like you're supposed to be able to do. And that's really ableism, internalized ableism, that it's just in the air we breathe and we don't even notice it. And it's all these expectations of how much is the right amount to accomplish and what it looks like to do things that it's supposed to be done a certain way. And so that's really what I coach people to notice and recognize, and then to see their strengths and then also honor their needs. And because a disability is not always a superpower, and so it bothers me when the focus is only on like it's a superpower. It's like, no, it's actually really hard, and it can be very invisible where people don't realize. And those differences that are subtle but they're significant can actually be really intense, and people can beat themselves up a lot because they just don't have the forgiveness factor that people who have a really obvious disability that's visible can get. And so it's not about comparing whose disability is more impactful or who's more marginalized. Like, that's not the goal, to have the Olympics of who has the most struggle or anything like that, but to acknowledge that when you have something that's invisible to most people and the expectations for you are these neurotypical expectations that have been set that are just not manageable, it's a really heavy load to carry, and that trauma and harm builds up over time. And so we need to give ourselves time to unravel it and heal from being in systems that were not designed for us, whether school or work or community events or relationships that were just not accessible for how we communicate, how we process, different things like that. Yes, Ardell.
Speaking of how we process, I've noticed with myself and my child that often it's really difficult for us to process a list of like a procedural list if we don't first have some context. It's like it seems like easy for some people to just say, "Oh, okay, I do this, then this, and this." And we're like, no, my brain is rejecting this because I'm a big picture thinker, and I need those steps to make sense in relation to the final outcome, or it almost like I can't. I can't remember the steps. Do you see that as I mean, maybe that's just an idiosyncratic thing, but does that seem to you, from your work, to be related to a typical, well, neurodivergence?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely executive function skills that are different in many neurodivergent people than what we're told is how our brain is supposed to function. It's supposed to easily be able to see a task, see the big picture, and be able to notice how do I break this down into smaller steps? How does everything fit together? How can I get started and be able to focus and attend and complete the task? And it's just not doesn't work that way for everybody. And it's not that it's a deficit or a problem, but when that's kind of how people are expected to think and process, and then you process differently, where you're just such a big picture thinker and you don't see the details and you don't see how things break down, or you need like extra clarity and context. Or, like in my case, I have trouble communicating clarity and context because it's so clear in my head. And I have difficulty with perspective taking of understanding what do other people know or don't know. And that's an autistic trait. And then I can't kind of figure out how to articulate what are the pieces that somebody else might need to know. And so I've had to figure out different ways to accommodate that to be able to communicate. And it can be like just really tricky and take a ton of energy and brain power for me to break down things like that or be able to provide context too. So I can relate a lot to that way of processing, Ardell, that you have.
You work a lot with people that are being entrepreneurs and self-employed. And what would you say is the activities or engagements that are most likely to be available and people to enjoy?
In terms of like the types of jobs or
Yeah.
businesses that they create.
I wanted to stay away from that word, but yeah.
So I would say it really just depends on what their strengths are. If they're a visual spatial person, you know, I love the multiple intelligences where it's looking at like, are you good at art or music or connecting with nature or numbers and math or logical thinking or reading and writing or interpersonal or intrapersonal within yourself, you know, physical sports and movement stuff, and just looking at, okay, what are the types of intelligences that I have that may or may not have been recognized in a traditional educational environment, yeah, Carrie, or work environment, and then like, how can I do what I love and what I'm good at and be able to, you know, receive an income and have financial stability and build wealth and be able to, you know, take care of myself and my own needs and then be able to use that those resources to support my community. And so I literally think anything that you're interested in can be work and can be income for you. Ardell.
I'm curious about your Infinity House community, about what have been one or more of the highlights, just a moment or an event that you really that either you personally or that you felt everyone really got a lot out of.
Well, one thing that I love about the Infinity House is that there's just a wide variety of different disabilities and neurodivergent profiles. And so we have one adult with an intellectual disability and developmental disability who needs a host home provider and has like government services and supports in terms of being able to pay a caregiver. And then we have somebody who was so nurturing and was trying to figure out like what's a way to have consistent income and be able to have some stability while I grow my business. And she's just the most amazing caregiver and host home provider. And really, I just see the interdependence happening where both people benefit. And I think oftentimes we think, oh, this person with an intellectual disability who like clearly has significant support needs is the one who needs to like receive all of the help. And really, I think she brings so much to the community and is helping the host home provider and the other people have a sense of purpose and be able to learn new skills and work together and have that financial stability from getting to be a caregiver and provider. And then, like, when I launched my homeschool enrichment program, excuse me, my homeschool enrichment program, she came and ran our art station and showed my daughter and some of the kids how to finger knit and crochet and do fiber arts. And then at another event, she brought like canvases and had crayons and a hair dryer and a hot glue gun, and they were melting them and making abstract art onto the canvas. And really, like putting her in the leadership role of being a mentor and showing other people how to do the art project. My daughter really struggles to go to community events and be around just, you know, there's social anxiety and stress, and she's so comfortable around this person. And now crochet and fiber arts is one of her top hobbies that she's doing all of the time. And she was starting to get like so tired of just looking at her phone and playing video games all of the time. And now she's like getting off of it herself because she's choosing to do these activities that that person taught her. And then another exciting thing is with this person, she for a couple of years has been advocating with her shared decision-making team and different providers around wanting to have her own business, making soaps and hand sanitizers with essential oils. And oftentimes was told, like, well, why don't you just go volunteer at the Arc? Or why don't you go get a job at Panera? And it wasn't what she wanted to do. And now that she's in this space where it's like, you know, we support entrepreneurship and anybody can be an entrepreneur, and she's getting coaching, she is selling them at like some of the homeschool events. I bought some because I was a sponsor at a women's entrepreneurship networking event, and we could hand out swag to everybody when we got featured. And so I gave everybody a soap and my card. And, you know, that's so much better than like a pen with my logo on it or, you know, whatever else swag people do. Now they're going to remember me because whenever they wash their hands, they'll be like, oh, Megan brought that, you know? And so it's like, it helps me and my mission. And she was so excited to the empowerment that comes from having your own money, because for all of her purchases, she has to like ask her shared decision-making team, can I have money to buy this or that? And to get your own money and not have to ask anybody and be able to make decisions and have agency like that, that's really powerful.
I'd like to talk about the person that's severely disabled and needs help. I found that in a giving society, instead of taking, when you're focused on giving and the joy of giving, those are the most important people, the people that need help. I mean, what else am I going to do? I want to give and they need help. And it just, I think they become very valuable people in the community.
I think when we get so stuck on the definition of success as productivity, it really harms all of us. and that people who work slower or have areas of strength in traditionally areas that aren't valued, which is oftentimes like the arts and a lot of more feminine type jobs, they teach us and remind us of what is actually important in life around like joy and rest and being present. And like some of those things are the hardest things for me to do. And I just grew up in a house that wasn't like that and just had such a traditional definition of success and grinding. And so whenever I'm around people who are able to slow down and enjoy and create a life full of creativity and art and music, they're my best teachers.
Could I invite anyone if there's anyone that has a question about their own entrepreneurship, a struggle, this might be your chance to get a little free coaching moment.
Melissa.
Melissa.
Well, I'm really enjoying this. This is wonderful. I just was thinking, having the vocabulary around neurodivergence and even, some of the things that you were describing, both Ardell and Megan, in terms of the processing. Boy, was I laughing over here because I'm like, oh my God, I totally identify with those things. This has been driving me crazy for so long. And I have a care team and people I've been working with, and yet I've been struggling, getting the cooperation with the hours that I need in terms of my daily cycle. And, I have entrepreneurial ideas, but what I find is in the past, the way I've always worked, maybe it is because of the neurodivergence, is I always honed in on individuals who would appreciate maybe co-creating. And so, I could kind of tap in and realize, oh, this person's really great at this, this, and this. And then I would develop a relationship so we could, have some reciprocity. So I've got this housing concept that I'm interested in. And I thought it, just like you were saying, I thought it through in my head for about 6, 7 years. But I'm having difficulty balancing at my home care team. And then what I found is exactly what you were saying about this other person. They want you to get jobs first. And I'm like, oh my God, I've already worked at a professional scale that is way beyond getting jobs. And I'd be so bored out of my mind. And I would probably tax my body so badly that I would lose all inspiration and just go back down to zero nothing. So I'm just curious, for maybe a little bit from what I was saying, if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a vision for something, but you've had trouble actually executing it and getting started, I think it's about finding that collaborator, partner, person who's really good at the execution piece to do together with. And then making sure that you have the financial resources to be able to move forward with it. Because if you're not, having baseline financial stability to move forward with your ideas, then that's going to be a block every time. And really, they're out there. I work with a grant writing company. There's people who are really excited about mission-driven work. And it's about being okay with asking and putting your idea out there and having people think like, oh, you're too much of a dreamer. This is pie in the sky. Like, this is never going to happen. Too big. I stress people out with my ideas. I give a lot of people anxiety, and people get overwhelmed. And to be able to not let that get to you and keep sharing and sharing, before you feel ready. And, once you start, speaking about it and sharing with people and putting yourself in rooms where you feel like you don't belong because it's people who are really wealthy or powerful or famous or whatever, and remind yourself that you deserve to be there, you belong, you have ideas that are valid, and maybe that's going to be the opportunity to find the support and the resources that you need to take one step and to break it down into, allow yourself to take one step at a time and try. And I think failure is really important, getting comfortable with failing and learning from it and pivoting. And all of that we're taught in our society is like, you can't do that. You need to plan more, be ready more. And we get perfectionistic. And to be able to think, well, the first step I'm going to try is this, and like allow yourself to fail or something to go in a different direction than what you planned, and just keep iterating. That's how the big ideas start to evolve, and people start to get excited about what you're creating and join together with you and lift you up. And
Thank you. I just find it the biggest issue. It's so crazy. It's just like the initial start. I know I want to be consulting, and yet I haven't done that before. So I'm like, do I need a mentor so that I can like watch how they're consulting just so I can like get my bearings with it? That's the weird part. It's like I know that's what I need to do.
I mean, I think that's a brilliant idea to ask somebody if you could watch them consult, because oftentimes whenever I watch somebody do something, I'm like, oh, I could do that. Like, this is actually not that crazy that I think that I could be a person to do something like this. And the other baby step I would say is a really great place to start is to do like market research, where you're just doing like listening tours. And so you find people that you would love to consult with, and you ask them, like, could I just learn more about you and learn more about what the challenges that you face? And you just listen, and you just get to know them and ask questions and be curious and build a relationship. And maybe even help, make a connection for them, or share something that is valuable and helps them out. And I think that's the initial start where you can build your confidence in reaching out to people and just learn more, what are the challenges that they might need consulting on, from their own words.
Thank you. And you hit on it before when you said you also like bringing people together. So do I.
That's very valuable to, when you're networking, to say, I'd love to connect you with this person. And then they remember that you did that for them and you made a deposit. And then, as you build relationships over time and people start to learn more about you, that can be the thing that leads to you getting an opportunity to get to, do your consulting and get income from it.
One closing thought with that. So, if you were going to work on learning more about vocabulary around neurodivergence or being in community with others for neurodivergence, where would one go look?
One website that has a lot of really great screeners around neurodivergence is called Embrace Autism. And it's not just autism screeners on there, there's other ones too. And I think that those kind of self-assessments were really powerful for me. It's a really neuroaffirming website. And then there's different communities, depending on what you're looking for. Like, I know the founder of Divergently has an online community. My community has networking events. We've paused them for a little while, but we're starting them back up soon. And like the Colorado Neurodiversity Chamber of Commerce has lunch and learns and virtual workshops and things like that that you can go to. So there, yeah, it's just kind of depends on the type that you're looking for. There's Facebook groups.
So basically putting neurodivergence and community together, and maybe the idea of vocabulary again. That's very, very helpful. I'm glad you discovered what you needed to for yourself, having more self-advocacy, and that's so big. And I love the way that you put that together. So thank you very, very much for being here tonight. I appreciate everybody
Yeah,
bringing.
thank you.
Yeah, I want to mention another resource that may interest you, Melissa. I put in the chat a link. We've at ICMatch, there's a listing of consultants that have skill sets that are needed for intentional community founding. And you might find something local there. And if you do find someone outside of that list, please point them to this no cost, no strings listing, where it's you can just kind of think of it as a LinkedIn just for intentional community topics with no paywall.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to just mention maybe the importance of support groups along these lines. One of the things that we like to do here, one of the things that was founded on, is a support group for people that are looking for community, a place where people can come and find other people that are looking for it, but at the same time, talk about some of the things that maybe stand in the way of forming community. And the name of the group is Caring Community. So it's definitely about that and providing that kind of emotional support, which I think is really very, very important. And I would offer that space, this space, to anyone who's looking for that kind of support, because I think we're all here to help each other. And that takes a lot of the pressure off of you when you know there's other people that are part of this and are supporting you through it.
Hey, I actually have to self-advocate now, and I'm getting tired, and I need to go and rest a little bit, but I appreciate you inviting me.
Yeah, thanks so much, Megan.
Well, we certainly
Okay.
appreciate your being here, and I hope that maybe you'll stop by again at some point just to say hello and share the space. But thank you so much. I think we all got a great deal out of this.
If anybody's curious about their brain and how it works, I have a quiz at intensityhub.com that might help you understand yourself a little better. So,
Thank you.
alrighty,
Thanks
bye.
again.
Yeah, I'd like to see if Trevor would like to join in and just kind of give us a sense of what your interests are and see if people here might have some ideas how to promote or forward your project.
Yeah, that was all really valuable information. That was really cool. But thank you guys. Yeah, I'm in the Northeast. I'm up in Vermont right now. But I've volunteered at a couple of different communities. I've Camp Hill and Camp Hill based communities. So I've lived in community with that supports neurodivergence and have been in the caregiving role. And it's something that I don't know. It's sort of a living situation that I really cherish, and that I really I don't know, it's sort of a place where it was the most acceptance I had ever felt in a community. And like, it was just this sort of sense of radical acceptance that I had never really, I mean, even come close to feeling before. So I think just in that, and just in the things that I learned living in community as well, just, working in the garden, learning about all that, that was like a brand new passion that I sort of, I don't know. So I had all these things that I sort of just experienced and learned, and just through living in this very specific type of community. And I think I had this realization that like that's sort of what I would want to do and create, so others can have a similar experience that I did, and you know, a similar, because I think it's just as much for the people that you know are helping and caring in the caregiving roles, and you know, the family members, and I think these kind of communities, they're not just for the very specific individuals that they serve. I really feel like they can be sort of a sorry, my dog is being really annoying right now. But yeah, I really do think they can be this sort of shining beacons for you know the community at large. I think they can be really important. And so my partner and I, we have a 15-year-old son who is you know he lives with autism. And just through the school system here, just the needs aren't really met, and it's just been a struggle, and it's yeah, I don't know. It's been hard to connect with other families that are in the area that are, you know, but yeah. So I guess I've just been looking to reach out and connect with other people and sort of create this thing. And I know there are other people like me out there who sort of, you know, want to create this and build this, and are looking to, you know, create a support system and create community and you know, build something that can sort of help others in a pretty big way. So yeah, that's all I got.
Thanks, Trevor.
I'd like to thank everyone who attended and who participated. We keep this space open for discussions like this, sometimes with guests, sometimes just among ourselves. We're here every week and are open to anyone who wants to join us. Please see the accompanying notes for more information. Until next time, thank you for listening.